The ANC delivered its January 8th statement last Saturday. The theme for this year is the year of unity and renewal to defend and advance South Africa's democratic gains. It's not the first time the party speaks of renewal. What could be different now? To speak with UCT Dean of Politics and Analyst Associate Professor Zweliwe Jolobe about the party's renewal and rebuilding, Jolobe is doubtful that the party's subordinates will heed to the call.
Every party is capable of renewing, and every party is capable of rebuilding. It has got all the capabilities, it's got all the resources. It also has got the right people, I think, who are able to do that, right? So that's the first thing. Yes, it can do that. The second part of the question maybe is the most important one, is whether it has got the will to do that. Meaning, do the people who currently occupy a position of authority have the will to be able to turn the party around in a way in which they say that they want to? And the answer is no. And the reason for that is that I don't think that they have been in any position in which changing the way they do things or not changing the way they do things will pose a threat for them in a general election. And so the moment when they do not feel that they do not need to do anything different in order to get re-elected, then there's no will for them to change in a way in which they want to. And so the dilemma that they have is that they've got people who are in power in the ANC who want to change. That's true. You have the president, you have people who are close to him, and all those things. The problem that they have here is that a lot of the people who want to renew the ANC, who want to reform the ANC, primarily are in the national executive of the ANC. And the dilemma they have is that the ANC is beyond the national executive. It also exists in the different provinces. It also, even within those provinces, exists in regions. It also, within those regions, exists in branches. And I'm not sure whether the message or whether the theme of rebuilding and renewal resonates within ANC branches, within ANC regions, and within ANC provinces. And that, I think, is where the problem lies, in the sense that when there is no will or when there is no commitment on the part of the ANC in provinces, in regions and branches to heed the message of rebuilding and renewal, then all it is just empty rhetoric, which is why it keeps on finding itself in the same position all the time, despite the fact that there are people who are able to clearly articulate what renewal should look like and how to do it. The issue that they have is that they are not capable of carrying their own members with them.
The party took a knock in the recent government elections, achieving less than 50%. Jolobe believes it's not a lesson learned for the ANC.
If we look at local election results, the first thing is that the ANC might not attach as much importance to them as maybe we think that they should, right? So that's the first thing. And in that, yes, they might see it as a big knock. And yes, they might see it as, you know, you're losing places like Cape Town and Johannesburg, Pretoria, etc. But I think that, you know, the way that many of these organizations work is that so long as you control national government, you're able to dictate politics in ways that other parties can't. I think that the way perhaps that they manage their risk is that, yes, they can take a hit in certain big metros, but so long as they retain an overall majority of the electorate, right, then they are secure in where they're at. I think that for me is that the turning point for the ANC probably is coming now. And I think that you're quite correct in the sense that there is definitely an important shift in the terrain outside the ANC. And I think that for me is that the important shift here is that money is drying up, right? And so before you had things like the Political Party Funding Act, where people who could donate to parties have to declare, before you had all these, or you have this general interest and on who funds parties, you must remember that the ANC had an extraordinary amount of money in comparison with other parties, right? One could even make the argument that the playing fields were always uneven. What's happened now is that the money that the ANC previously had access to has dried up. And the implications there is that all of a sudden, they can't pay their members in Luthuli House who work for them. And while now it may generate interest in terms of people protesting and all these things, in the long run, that is going to have a huge effect on their mobilization ability in relation to other parties. And so one could argue that why turnout has become such an issue is because they are not able to mobilize their members in ways that they could in previous elections. And that is a function of resources. And I think that you're also quite correct in that the trends that we've seen in, say, the last two local elections paint a picture of a country that is moving towards a much more competitive multi-party system that is going to shape the next general election. And I think that the point when you are going to have the ANC beginning to think quite seriously about renewal is on how they perform in the next general election.
Jalobe says the decline of the ANC may be attributed to the party's application of discipline.
Discipline is more about how party members approach the rules and procedures of the organization, right? Do they have respect for them, right? Do they have respect for process? Do they respect for all these things? And the thing is that where you have organizational decay is when members or people who are part of that organization no longer respect those rules, meaning they sort of, you know, do their own thing. And that has important institutional consequences for the way in which that organization works. And so I think that for the ANC, definitely, that is their most important handicap, because what it does is that once rules no longer become predictable and once people no longer operate according to those rules, then it becomes a free-for-all. The problem that they have, I think, is that they maybe are a little too oversized. And it's fine for parties to be oversized, to be big, but being big has to be accompanied by resources. So you can be a massive organization so long as you've got the resources to feed it. The moment those resources dry up, then you begin to have these problems. And this is where they are at the moment. I think that the other thing that we perhaps tend to overlook in the last 2 years is that a very, very strong ANC was in part dependent on a very cohesive trade union movement, right? And here we're looking at NUMSA, the NUM, looking at SATAO, looking at all these sort of big unions. And those unions were very, very cohesive insofar as they were managed by COSATU as the overall federal union. What we term ANC organizational discipline was in part a function of a strong union culture. What kept ANC branches going, whether it's branches or regions or provinces, was that they were also in part affiliated to very, very strong trade unions. The moment you pull the rug under that, for a party like the ANC, you in a sense kill it. What the core identity of the ANC was, especially after 94, was the working class and in particular, the trade union movement. The Zuma years killed that. And the moment you do that, this is why you see all of these problems now that you're not talking about, the lack of discipline, institutional, organizational decay, and all these things. And now you have this situation now where NUMSA even said, we wash our hands of this. We're done with this. We're going back to Port Elizabeth. You've got to think about, you know, the kind of decline of the ANC in relation to that. And most importantly, one of the main means of mobilization in terms of electoral mobilization, in terms of grassroots, in terms of leading campaigns, etc., were the unions. And what's happened, especially in the Zuma years, is that you had the capture of the ANC of very, very scrupulous capitalists, right, who came in many forms and sizes. And the one thing that happens when you have all these businessmen who begin to replace what the unions did is that they then have their own interest, which is to promote their own commercial enterprises. They don't care about whether or not one is able to write research papers on unemployment, for instance, right? Despite the fact that the country for the last, 10 years has experienced, literally a net rise in unemployment. There's no research going into that. There's no thinking going into that. It's literally businessmen who want to get a tender for a coal mine or get a tender for a road, etc., which has huge implications for how the general functioning of the organization is. And so, well, the state capture report, you know, talks about the capture of state enterprises and all these things. I think that the big elephant in the room here is that all of that is in part a result of the increase in the private financial interest of the ANC over a period. And now that has dried up, but it has dried up at the same time as the union movement is pretty much demobilized.
The leadership of the ANC, including Cyril Ramaphosa, David Mabuza and Limpopo Premier Stanley Matabata, are in tune saying the ANC is not corrupt, but individuals within the party are, and that the ANC will never die.
I think they're being a bit disingenuous, because I think that whenever we understand corruption, I think that the more conservative view is to say it is person A who behaved in this way, or it's person B who did that, or person C who did not do that. I think that what you have to do is you have to look, especially when it comes to things like political corruption, is that you've got to look at the what is termed the enabling environment for it, right? So people will always find shortcuts, right? That's going to happen. You know, you want to travel to Europe, but your passport is going to take, 6 months. If you can get it in 3 months, you'll do that, right? So the point is that people are always going to try to take shortcuts, right? Because it's driven by things like results and all this and power, etc., right? The question is that what is going to shape, or what are the rules, what's the environment that's going to shape behavior, whether it can restrict behavior or whether it can control behavior? If you have an environment that is not able to control behavior, then you have corruption. And I think that the problem that we have here is that we have an environment, you've got an organizational environment that enables it. If you look at the current president, in the sense that the one person who is meant to be the shining star or the lodestar of renewal and rebuilding and reform, you have to look at the amount of financial resources that were put into his primary campaign. Forget the general election campaign, just the primary to get elected into the party is extraordinary. And if the sheriff behaves that way, how do you think everybody else behaves?
For Times Live Podcast, Mbulelani Mngela.